Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Pounder with cheese and France, Mickey. What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly saw sacrifice at my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And JD.
And we've been off for 2 weeks, enjoying the holidays and our families, I think.
Define enjoy.
Nothing that would get you landed in jail.
Oh, okay. I think I was more along the lines of tolerate, except for my nephews. They're just freaking awesome.
So we've been off for 2 weeks, we've been keeping busy. If you've been paying attention to the website, there's been a lot of reviews that have gone up and some news articles, and been trying to keep people in the loop of things. So we're back. We got a lot to talk about this week. Before we get to all that, how was everyone's holidays? How was, JD? How was your Christmas? How was your sons?
Pretty good. Like, I didn't get anything, but it was fun watching him. Like, this isn't his first Christmas, but this is his first Christmas. He's like aware of Christmas.
Right.
So, and he had like five of them with various family groups and stuff like that. So, December 26th, he had a really hard time understanding that the Christmas doesn't come every day.
Aww.
So, yeah, it was good, though.
Yeah, I remember that. The first ones when they're aware. And then, because like we have family in Jersey, so we would go and see them a couple days after Christmas, and they would give them presents. And then it's like, oh, well, now can I get more presents?
That's exactly where my wife saw her dad in Wisconsin. And then we saw my family, and then he saw my mother-in-law, and it was like presents, 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 presents. And the next day he was like, where's more presents?
This is not a continuing thing. Wait till your birthday.
Yeah, and his birthday's in February, so every day is it today my birthday?
It was my granddaughter's first Christmas, but they're only 6 months old, so. Wasn't that exciting? I mean, you know, they got a lot of things for two little babies, but, they're not fully aware of what's going on yet. One thing that was kind of cool, my wife had this idea, it was a Christmas Eve box, she called it. So we basically got a wooden box and put a lid on it. The lid is actually like a serving tray, and we stained the box red and the top white and burned a picture into it of a Christmas scene, and then there's a poem on the inside for them. And the idea is that every Christmas they put the stuff in there before, while they're decorating, whatever, they put the stuff in there they want for Christmas Eve, and then the tray is that they put the milk and cookies on. So that was cool. My daughter really liked it. My son-in-law said thank you, but he's a guy. He's a young guy. Doesn't get too excited about that kind of stuff.
No.
And then after we had this wonderful Christmas, my wife was in the hospital for a week with pneumonia.
Oh.
She's out now. So she's good. But yeah, she was in there during New Year's Eve. So that's how we spent our New Year's Eve.
So she got to return her gift.
Yes. Yeah. So all the Christmas cookies she didn't like.
I was talking about the influenza, but,
How about you, John? Apparently you spent it with your nephews.
Yeah, went up to stay with my sister in Connecticut, and basically most of my gifts to the two oldest nephews were all of the latest manuals for Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition. And then I learned to play Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition, and me being somebody who's played every version since the Manila envelope books back in the 70s, this is yet another variation of the rules in my head that are going to get messed up with THACO. And anybody who plays D&D is going to know what I mean.
Yes.
I got them playing, and now they want to play with me, I think, over the phone. And it should be good, because that's a lot better than the Fortnite crack that they keep swilling. Oh. My God, it's Fortnite all the time. You have no idea that these kids are so addicted.
But you know what? They can win big money in those competitions. It's insane.
Yeah, the people who win the money in those competitions are, like, you know, tied into the trunk line of the internet, you know, 3 milliseconds past where the actual Fortnite servers are. You need extremely low ping to be able to win in those things. Trust me, they had me play with them. And I used to be pretty good at Unreal Tournament and Quake. But damn, you know, some of the reaction times on these things, it's like, you know, hey, I see somebody, I'm dead. I'm just dead. I'll just wait another 13 minutes and go to the next one.
There's also a big difference now, too, is that you're old.
That doesn't mean anything.
Your reaction time is slower than it used to be.
Oh, my reaction time is actually still pretty good. If I'm on a local server, I still hold my own, but I'm telling you. Anyway, yeah, Fortnite, stay away from it. You know, lock it up from your kids. They will never kick that addiction. Trust me.
Yes, trade it for something even better, like Dungeons and Dragons. Wait.
Yes, you must teach them to be the spawns of Satan. No. Spawns of Tiamat. Okay, but yeah, so everything was good. Cool. Yeah.
Cool. We've had some interaction while we were off, but not a lot. And there was just a couple that I was going to mention. We had talked about the cancellation of Punisher. And Shannon Bishop had replied to us. Honestly, I hope this means he'll show up in the MCU finally. It probably doesn't, but I have to have something to live for. Okay, Shannon, let me tell you, it's just a character in a TV show. We're sad it was canceled too, but there are things much more worth living for. Like, come on guys, give me something.
Friends, family, food. The 3 F's.
There you go.
4 if you want to get.
Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the conversation I had half the city of Chicago last night.
What?
That there is more to life. Oh, come on, you guys are Philadelphia guys.
Oh,
the football game.
Yeah, a little football game.
Go New England.
Hey.
Oh, that's right, you're a New England fan, I forgot.
Not a fan, I grew up in Connecticut. I didn't have a choice with that. Giants in New England for me.
As a Chicago guy, it's been fairly ugly, and you have to remind people that there's more to life than a football game that you had no control over.
I'm a geek. I already have a life beyond football games. Now, if they canceled my favorite anime, then I'd go out and riot.
Yeah, you probably would.
Everybody got to go to war for something.
Yeah.
You know what, though? You guys can take solace. You know, the Eagles aren't going to get far.
Even the Cowboys win. It's like, bleh. It's
no good. Yeah.
They already started a pot at my work. I mean, this morning, the very first thing they started talking about was the game, and it's like, okay, going once, how much we, you know, pick your numbers. and they're like, you know, they asked me, oh, did you see the game? I said, yeah. What was it? 30 love at the end?
No, that's tennis. There's no love in football.
It's true.
Apparently.
And then the other one I was going to mention was we talked about, of course, Captain Marvel and the trailer. And Sir, good game, had said, is she shape-shifting? You know, like there's reptilian reporters on the news, dot, dot, dot. And then he followed that with, I'm joking, by the way.
Were you?
I don't know. I thought that was
Were
funny.
You really?
Well, you know, come on. Have you watched CNN lately?
No.
So yeah, that's really all the social media that we're going to talk about. We'll have plenty more to talk about next week. We won't stop doing it. It's JD's favorite segment.
Actually, well, on that subject, a couple weeks ago on the show, I jokingly asked what was Take a Knee versus Marvel in DC. And it's actually, they guys reached back out to me through our feed, and it's a pretty cool podcast, actually. So I gave it a listen. I'm highly recommend people who like our show to check out Take a Knee for Marvel versus DC. I think you'll all like it.
See? Making friends.
Yeah.
That's what this show is all about, people. Right?
No comment. Go ahead.
A couple quick hit things that came out while we were on break. Of course, Punisher released a short trailer and the release date, which is going to be January 18th. You guys watched the trailer yet? Either
yeah.
There's two teasers. There were four in the DC.
So, yeah. Awesome. Christmas.
Do you have any idea how many rules changed in Dungeons & Dragons?
No. So they're definitely saying Punisher versus season. They basically did kind of what they did in Devil Deer. You see the two of them kind of getting ready to go to war with each other. You know, they had Fisk putting a suit on and Daredevil putting his suit on. This is the same kind of thing. So my first question is, are you guys excited to watch season two of The Punisher? And two, how long do you think they'll announce the cancellation after they release it?
Well, first on, I didn't know John Kramer was part of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
John Kramer, Jigsaw,
is that a Saw reference?
Yes, that's obviously, I'm the only one who's watched them. Okay,
I watched the first one was pretty good. They lost me after the second. I forgot that was his name.
Well, after the second, they made the movies just out of sheer irony. kind of like the Transformers movies, never mind. Go on, Dave. Insert stupid joke here.
The question is, did you watch, I know you watched season one, John. Did you watch season one, JD?
Did not.
It was, you got,
I got blah, blah, blah from that.
Oh, he said, go ahead. What were you just going to say, JD?
Nothing.
Oh.
Oh, okay. I was going to say the first season was, I think, the proper, the word that describes it is visceral.
Yes.
If you saw Daredevil, right, JD?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So as hard as it was to watch some of those scenes where he fights his way through, like, a hallway, the Punisher was much worse. Like, they get really into it's almost halfway to like basis of death. I mean, it's just like some of it is literally almost torture porn, but it's done very tastefully.
Of course, that's the best kind of torture porn.
The answer to the second question is 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah, we're start. Okay, so for all the listeners, we're starting an over under poll. What do you? Is it going to be over or under 2 weeks? Well, one of the guys I work with said, probably 2 days. I'm like, I think they're going to give you longer than 2 days because they want people to download it. And they're afraid if they announce it too early, people won't watch it. So
I wonder if that's going to have an impact on how many people watch it. If they're thinking it doesn't matter because there's never going to be another one, if that's actually going to have an impact on the downloads.
That's a good point.
Or the streams. I guess they're not downloads. I guess they'd be streams.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I'll be curious, but of course they don't ever release their numbers, so.
True.
Yeah, we won't know. They'll blame it on that or something.
Oh, there's gonna be a lot of blame going around. Blame. That's what Netflix and Marvel are doing. The blame game. It's blamey blamed.
And the other piece of news that was announced is, the CW has officially ordered a pilot for a Batwoman series led by Ruby Rose playing Batwoman.
We kind of knew that would happen, though.
The backdoor pilot. And...
yeah, I mean, yeah. That's we all knew it was going to be a backdoor pilot, I think. But there definitely was a lot of buzz on the internet about Ruby Rose's portrayal as Batwoman, so.
Yeah, I thought she did pretty good. I think she's one of the few people that have, like, a presence enough to do it right, you know? Because she can look and act pretty damn mean. And, I'm actually surprised they got her because I thought she was a little bit bigger than that. I mean, she's doing movies now. I didn't think she'd want to go back to, you know, to TV doing a serial.
Yeah, but that's not, doing TV doesn't have the same stigma on it that it used to, I don't think.
Yeah, but it still can't pay as well.
Well, depends. I mean, unless you're a big time actor, you're not making the kind of money you used to. Like TV, man, if you hit syndication in TV, you can make a fortune for life.
Oh, with residuals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those Friends actors are making like $20 million a year.
Yeah.
So this is like this is the 401k of actors, right?
Pretty much.
Could be.
So, I mean, there's no other details, obviously, at this point. They just ordered a pilot. And that's not even a guarantee that it's going to be, you know, greenlit into a series, right? Because they could make the pilot and it could be awful and CW might go, not going to happen. Doubtful, but, you know, that's always a possibility. So, I mean, I'll keep my eyes on this. My guess is it will go through and it'll be next season. It'll be part of the lineup.
So do they have any shows that aren't comic book related between the DC shows and Riverdale? Like seriously, what else is on the network?
There's the new Charmed.
Well, that doesn't count. I mean, really, I've watched a few episodes and it got pretty corny pretty quick. And
it to be just, sure, the first Charmed was also pretty corny,
right?
Yeah, but back then it had charm. Putting my foot in the running for worst jokes for 2019 already.
You're winning.
And there's also the 300th season of Supernatural.
Oh God.
Oh, I forgot about that show.
How does it even? I mean, I don't understand how that thing keeps going. It's got to be like whatever Gotham has been distilled and concentrated, and that's what they're drinking.
Or vice versa, because that show's been out way longer than Gotham.
Well, exactly. Yes. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's just
when your main characters have both died and come back multiple times, it's time to end the show. It's
all when you've like what they've fought and beaten God at this point. I mean, what the hell else can they do? Seriously, God and the devil.
They can both.
One can become God, one can become the devil and fight with each other.
I think that was season 5.
I'm not surprised that's actually it.
This is kind of like The Simpsons, right? It's like they've done everything, you know?
Well, they could team up with Scooby. Oh, wait, they did that.
They did, they really? They already teamed up with Scooby.
They teamed up with Scooby Doo?
Yep. Yes.
Wow. I've never watched a single episode.
Well, now you know everything you need to know. I mean, they've done so much that they even teamed up with a cartoon character.
I'm good.
A famous one.
So yeah. I think it's going to quickly become the DC network.
I think it pretty much is. That'll be about 5 shows.
They must be winning with them, though. I mean, the numbers look good for most of the shows.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a shame because I don't think they're ever going to cross over with the stuff that's on the app, you know? So you have the Titans on the app, and then everything else on the CW right now, you know? So we're never going to get Robin, or at least that version of Robin. I guess they don't care, right? Because they gave us Superman. Now they've given us Batwoman. They're hinting at Batman. Yeah.
And they've given us, like, the best Flash. They've given us a fairly good Supergirl if they switch out the writers. Arrow has been pretty good. I caught back up and actually last season finished up pretty good. It finished off fairly adequately, and this season is actually gearing up to be really good. So, I mean, yeah, and Black Lightning is awesome.
I'll be curious to see what happens next year, because they're hinting at doing Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Right.
Next season in their big crossover. So, you know, supposedly we've been told since Flash started, that's where he disappears. So.
Right. Well, I mean, they've gotten better and better with these crossovers. The Dominator one was kind of stupid. But the one with the wedding where they fought the Nazis from another dimension at the wedding, that was pretty cool. And this last crossover, was it with the Monitor and everything, that the one that's setting up Crisis on Infinite Earths, it was I think it was done well.
It was, but that's another one where it was like they could have ended it with just the two episodes, you know.
Maybe. I think the weak link here seems to be the writers on
Supergirl. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they even mentioned, was it they shoehorned in the saying, you know, was it world's finest? But they shoehorned it in such a way that you're sitting there like, well, no human beings would have looked at each other and said those things.
Right.
it's writing like that that really frustrates me, because the writing on the other shows is you know, pretty damn good for TV shows.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll get better. We'll see.
Probably. Hey. Hey, compared to the movie universe, they're killing it.
Ah, well, speaking of the movie universe, did we just do a segue?
Yeah.
So let's then head on to our main topic of the evening. So of course, two major movies came out at the end of last year, and we're going to discuss them, and we're going to rate and compare and contrast them. So instead of just doing a review of Aquaman and a separate review of Spider-Verse, I think we can kind of talk about them together, and just compare them, because, both movies are actually doing fairly well in different ways, and no one expected it. So yeah. So first, okay, let's real quick talk about the numbers. Aquaman, the Rotten Tomatoes score of 65%. It had a budget of 160 to 200 million, so they haven't officially released the budget yet. But worldwide gross is 940.7 million, which is the highest grossing DCEU film. I think that says a lot.
About how bad the others were?
Yeah.
Seriously, yes.
And then, Spider-Verse has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. And with a budget of 90 million, their worldwide gross is 275.3. So
you forgot another number. Two. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse has two awards, the Golden Globe for Best Animated Feature and the New York Film Critics Award for Best Animated Film.
Eh.
Well, it counts, man.
It does, because it's probably going to win an Oscar, too.
It's going to win the Best Animated Oscar?
100%.
Really? I would love to see that. It's got the best chance I can think of, yeah.
What other animated movies came out this year? What Disney movies came out this year?
That's my point. If it wins the Golden Globes, you know, there's nothing else that's been that good. Like, that's pretty much my point.
All right.
Nothing else came out that's that good.
All right. So then let's do this. Let's start with Aquaman. Let's go around the room. And just give me your initial non-spoiler reaction. And we'll start with JD.
It's all right.
Okay.
Yeah. My reaction is pretty good. There's stuff that I didn't like. There was stuff that I liked. I enjoyed, the night out I had with my wife, the 2-year-old away. But, there's things I really liked. There was things I didn't like. But on the whole, it was my second favorite of the DC animated, or the DC, E, what's that E stand for in DCEU?
Extended. Yeah.
DCEU films. It's my second favorite.
Okay. And John?
It's a nice little romp. I mean, go to the theater, grab the refillable large popcorn, and a lot of water, and just, you know, sit down and enjoy the ride.
That's too much water. You'll have to pee. It's a long movie.
Yeah.
It is a long movie, yes.
But I mean, I second JD. It's my second favorite so far. I think there are parts of it where you're just like really enjoying. They did CG. The CG is pretty good. There was no parts that I can think of where the uncanny valley hit me in the face, but there were also parts of it that sort of got awkward. Like they were going for a superhero pose or just, you know, to do the, okay, this is where you all cheer, like really hitting you in the face with it. I mean, it was a really good movie when it wasn't trying to force you to do, you know, telling you what you were supposed to feel.
I disagree on the CG. I thought the fight scenes looked kind of cornball, and my wife hated the monster.
The big Kraken thing?
Yeah, the Kraken, the Cthulhu monster. I didn't hate that. I thought it was fine. But, yeah, she was not a fan. I thought the fight scenes looked a little corny.
They weren't as bad as I've seen before.
You're right. No, you're right. They could have been a lot worse. But they don't. I don't think they're as good as the Marvel ones.
No,
they're not. You're right.
So I was pleasantly surprised because I actually went in with very low expectations, even though people were telling me it was a good movie. I'm like, but it's Aquaman and it's Jason Momoa. I think if you shut your brain off, you really enjoy this movie. I just have two big issues with the movie, and we'll get into that as we get into spoilers. Okay, so then Spider-Verse, and we'll start with John.
I cannot recommend this movie more. It made me cry. So, and there were several points where it threatened to make me cry again. It's just really well done. Every portrayal of every one of the Spider-Men is spot on. The comic relief from all the different Spider-Men is perfect. The storyline is damn good. And the animation, you have to see it. It's really amazing. And you have to, I don't know if this might be just me, but I've seen it twice. I saw it once in 3D in one theater here at home. And it was, if you see it in 3D, if you can see it in 3D, it's amazing. But when I saw it the second time, I saw it in 2D at my sister's place, and the background still looked like you were supposed to have 3D glasses on, to the point where I was looking next to me to see if I hadn't gotten the glasses when I should have. I was looking at other people saying, are you wearing glasses? No. So I'm not sure if that was the theater or what, but if you can see it.
I know what you're talking about. That's an effect they're going for. And specifically early in the story when that happens, it's to, obscure the background. I read something about this. That was to, kind of simulate Miles becoming and feeling the new powers and the backgrounds, like having a hard time focusing.
Yeah. There were some of that. I think at parts though, there was that one bridge with the name of the school on it, I think. And in the 3D in the scene, it was clear. In the 2D, it looked like it should have been in 3D. but it's just one scene that stuck in my head. So, and there were probably a few others. If I saw it again, I could point them out. But beyond that, this movie, just go see it. It's perfect for kids. I went and saw it with my nephews, and they're 12, 10, and 4. And they were actually, they didn't get up. They enjoyed it.
Okay. JD?
I've seen the trailer 600 times because my son is in love with it. I've listened to the Post Malone theme song 1,400 times.
I didn't mention music. Yes.
And that being said, it is a beautiful film. Everything John said was right. I got emotional too several times, but I also cried watching a DDP yoga commercial today about a really heavy guy that lost 300 pounds. So I mean, it's not hard to get me emotional, but, I simply adore this film, everything about it. I love the characters. I love the story. I love the soundtrack is fantastic. Not only is this my favorite Spider-Man film, this might be my favorite superhero film.
All right, well.
How are we going to continue this
now? Oh, I'm fully expecting Dave to torch this thing.
Hey, Dave.
It didn't live up to the hype for me. I'm sorry. Everyone keeps talking about what a great movie this is. I watched it, and I'm like, it was decent. But I could have waited for Blu-ray to watch this. Like, there was no need to go to the theater for this movie. It felt like a cartoon. It was a cartoon. It was not a superhero movie.
It's okay, Dave. You're dead inside. We understand.
Oh. So.
I disagree. I saw it twice. So, me too. I liked it so much I grabbed my wife and took her to it the next day.
So, okay. So at this point, boys and girls, we're going to be starting to talk about spoilers. So if you haven't seen any of these movies, which I'm sure at this point you have because they've been out for a while now. And so if you haven't, though, and you don't want the spoilers, then stop it here and come back later and listen. Or you don't care, here we go. All right. So how do we want to do this?
What do we want to do? I suppose we talked about Aquaman first, so let's do Aquaman first.
Okay. So my biggest issue, and I thought I was going to be able to look past it, it's the issue I've had with Jason Momoa since he got cast as Aquaman. Dude, bro, Aquaman gets on my nerves quickly. And since it's an entire movie all focusing on him, it was like, oh, he is he's great eye candy for women, but he's not a great actor. And you made an excellent point about this, JD, with Amber Heard, if you want to.
I'll jump in. He gave me the opening. My biggest qualm with this movie is I'm going to refer to it as the Zack Snyder-iness of it, and there's not a lot of it, but there's just enough of it to influence the direction where the movie goes. My biggest beef with this movie is Amber Heard. Because I don't think she's very good. And I don't disagree with anything Dave said. Dude Bro Aquaman is a thing. I kind of like the thing. I've jokingly called him Aqua Reigns because he looks and acts like the wrestler Roman Reigns. And that's so on display in this movie. But it worked for me. Like, I like the Peter David Aquaman. That's my favorite version of Aquaman. So, you know, minus a hook hand, it's that dude.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
but that's my favorite, so I was totally good with it. I actually think Momoa does a really good job doing for what they ask him to do. He's not a thespian. He's a model who became an actor who's all right. You know, I compared him to Arnold Schwarzenegger, I said Arnold's best stuff is when he's surrounded by better actors to level him up.
But
you know,
he had gravitas. I mean,
And I don't think that Momoa didn't, though, for what he was asked to do. And I think he did have gravitas when he was playing Khal Drogo in Game of Thrones.
Oh.
No one asked him to have gravitas in this movie. They wanted Dude Bro Aquaman. My problem with it is Amber Heard, who's cast because if one were to design a perfect female person, they would come up with Amber Heard. Like, she's absolutely stunning. But she's not very good. And her and...
she's not good. I think there's no chemistry between the two of them.
There is definitely no chemistry, but I think that, do you ever get a sense of her being a royalty? Does she ever come off to you like a princess? Does she ever come off to you like a mystical princess, like something special? You know, Aquaman play, this version of Aquaman is very, we'll call him every Aquaman. You know, he's not really Atlantean. He's very, got another one. Fish out of water. But it works. But with Mara, like, she's supposed to be of this world and royalty, but she just sounds like a person, you know, and her and Jason have zero chemistry. Like, there's that scene in the desert where they're wandering around the desert, very Spaceballs. And when I saw it in my head, first thing it went through my mind. But it's supposed to be like Hepburn and, oh my God, it's true. Like Bogart, like very African Queen. And, they just didn't have the chemistry to pull it off. And I think this is where the movie suffers, is that Jason Momoa can't carry a scene on his own. That's like I use the Schwarzenegger comparison. Schwarzenegger was always surrounded with people that were better than him, that would help him bring up his performance. And I think that because Zack Snyder is all visual first, made sure Amber Heard got the role, when a better actress, I think, would have, one, elevated the Merrick character, two, elevated the story. I think that the movie moves at breakneck speed, right? Like, it never slows down.
Yeah.
Like, it's action, 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 action. I think it's a conscientious choice on James Wan, because he knew if he tried to slow it down and have more of those character moments, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been god-awful. So I think he steered into the strengths of the actors that he had. But I think the movie does kind of suffer a little bit from that, from the lack of, like, personal moments.
Yeah.
I think if they had a better Mara, that wouldn't have happened.
I agree wholeheartedly with the, like, I really would love to have them explore Atlantis and show us what the people like are there and have Jason Momoa interact with some of them, you know, maybe like when he got captured.
They did show us some of it. It looks like underwater Las Vegas.
It is a stunning movie to look at.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, it's one of the most beautiful movies I could think of. Like, just as far as, like, visually appealing. Like, there's several times in the way, wow, this is just unreal just to stare at.
Can I jump in here?
Go ahead.
Okay, so, and not to pile on to Amber Heard, but there was one point where she gave a command, and it kind of sounded like a little girl going, "Now, I want you to do this." And I think, like, when Nicole Kidman as Atlanta was telling people to do things and on screen, she felt like royalty.
Because Nicole Kidman is a good actress.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
But, you know, and to the other point, Jason Momoa, like I said, there were certain parts of the movie where it just kind of suddenly, I don't know, the scene broke you out of the flow of the movie because they were told to do something comic booky. Like, go there and walk through the waterfall and then stand tall. And like, you're like sitting there going, why would he do that?
Yeah.
Why isn't he just, what? I mean, I get you need the shot, but we've seen his pecs. Thank you.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Oh, no. If I were going to date anyone, if I were going to date a man, I'd date him. But
But you're right. That scene of him walking out, it's just to have that, oh my goodness,
that image.
Shot image of him in the costume finally. And it's just like,
yeah. We pose really for the poster.
Exactly. Which
I laughed out loud when that happened.
Which I know, I almost did too.
Which goes back to being, you know, visual, which brings me to my other major issue with the movie. Why does everything have to be CG? Look, I understand Atlantis doesn't exist, and when they go underwater, you can do all the CG you want. But you can go on location to a real effing lighthouse. Like, why is that all CG?
Was it cheaper. All CG? Yeah, I don't know, but I didn't notice the CG in the lighthouse, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, yeah, if you're really paying attention, you can tell. Especially because, like, the sun is real soft in the background, you know, and just the way that the colors look, it's like, it just doesn't look real to me.
Well, it's color, a lot of it is color grading, where no colors are real in movies now. Everything is tweaked and color corrected. Like, no one shoots straight.
Well, so even if that's the case, and if it was shot in a real location, then they made it look CG by doing that, and it's just like, why?
Every movie does that now, though. There's not a movie that's released that doesn't play with the sky and stuff like that.
It's because everything has to match the director's vision, right?
But it just feels fake.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't say it's good. I just said it had to match his vision.
Like, the only scenes that felt like they were somewhere real were the scenes in Rome, because that must have been a really big soundstage for them to be on.
Sicily. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sorry. So it's like, Like, why can't the whole movie look like that? Then it would have felt better.
I don't know if you can. I think this is not the right movie to say that with, though. A movie that's supposed to take place in a magical undersea kingdom. Like, you can't do that. There's a reason we never had an Aquaman movie before. Yeah. You know?
Well, mostly because after Waterworld, there wasn't an actor anywhere that wanted to do that long a term on the ocean.
Spot on.
Because they had health problems during the filming of that, just because of, you know, being in the water so much.
And it sucked.
Yeah.
So, what did we think of our main protagonist in the movie, Patrick Wilson as Ocean Master?
I thought he was pretty good. I thought he had a good character arc. You know, motivated. I was okay with it. I thought he did a decent job.
Really? Okay. I thought he was a little mustache twirly.
I think he was supposed to be. I think that's what they wanted. Like, I don't think they, I mean, the problem, so, like, since the original Batman movies, I think movies have made a conscientious effort not to have the villain outshine the hero.
Yeah.
So I think that that's by design, you know?
Yeah, but I kind of felt like they gave Black Manta, regardless of how, misguided his reasons were, he had reasons to hate Aquaman. Like, they gave him real motivation in the story.
Yes, that his father just happened to give him this secret family dagger 30 seconds before he just happened to get killed by Aquaman. Like, it reeked of, like, the worst of Jeff Johns shoestringing and jamming everything possible into a single story.
Well, and then, you know, that just happens to be the one time that Aquaman looks down and says, hey, you're going down with the ship because you deserve it, you know?
I'd be fine if one of those things happened, but, like, all three of them happened in, like, you know, a minute.
Yeah, and it felt that scene where he just turns and says, well, you knew the risks or whatever, and just leaves the father there to die, that felt – it. I mean – Given everything else we know about him, it felt wrong. Like, that was just, it was like, well, I am leaving you here to die because the plot says I need to in order to show character growth later.
I like I said, it's the Zack Snyderiness.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and even though he's gone, it still feels like his shadow still looms over these movies.
But, I mean, John, you hit the nail on the head. It was so that they could show later on he regretted it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And right, that is.
But it was shoehorned in. It was like a robot program to do that. It wasn't. It didn't come naturally to the flow of the movie.
My problem is, why did he learn that lesson? Like, at no point in the script is that. At no point in the story does that lesson come back really to bite him. Like, okay, now you have a supervillain who was a villain beforehand. Like, there's no real personal consequence.
True.
To that mistake for him. Like, he just says, he's like, man, I shouldn't have done that. He just says it.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like it was a sailor, an ordinary sailor he left behind. You know, it was a villain already. Which would have
been better. Yeah, that would have made more sense if his mistake killed. Yeah, that would, it's a much better villain. But that being said, Black Man is way underutilized anyway.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing. I've heard this, criticism about the movie too, and as I watched it, it kept hitting in the back of my head, and I'm like, maybe, maybe not. Do you feel like crammed too much into this movie? Like, maybe this was Aquaman 1 and 2 crammed together because they're afraid they weren't ever going to get to make another one?
100%.
I can see that.
Yes. Like, I jokingly called it very Jeff Johnsy. It felt a lot like Green Lantern. Well, remember the Green Lantern came out, everything was shoehorned. But for some reason, it worked better in this movie. Like, I do think it played better, but I remember my wife and I joking around, like, oh, like, the part of the movie feels like, just Superman. Part of the movie feels like Indiana Jones. Part of the movie felt like The Mummy. Then when they're in the trench, it feels like a horror film. Like, I felt like I watched, like, six movies.
Yes.
And speaking of which, yes, mentioning Superman, that's another thing about these types of movies. Like, okay, we need some world-ending problem for our hero to fix. Okay, so all these warships and everything, they're pushed up on shore, and all these tidal waves are happening. Where's Wonder Woman and Superman? and the Flash. I mean, if something's happening in the sea, they just got finished fighting with a guy who happens to be from the sea. Nobody contacted him. Nobody. It's just like, you know, well, even it's like this movie happened in absentia of everything that happened before, even though it was acknowledged.
Counterpoint. I'm super glad they didn't. Like, I'm really glad they didn't do that.
So
that they did tie it in.
No, they didn't. But they didn't. It had to make a movie. Like, these DC movies have been so much of, hey, look at this. Hey, here, we're going to stick this thing in. Like Batman v Superman, the world's longest, worst court scene, is like the worst, most egregious example of just throwing in their characters unnecessarily to beat it over the head that this is part of a shared universe. I like the fact that Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman were barely mentioned, and it was a movie about Aquaman.
Oh yeah, but if that's the case, I mean, if you want a movie centered around Aquaman, don't present a scenario that would draw the attention of every other superhero on the planet, and then not mention them. You know, they didn't have to go as far as an actual attack on the entire planet. They could have just had that first attack on Aquaman's father's town in the beginning, and then everything else came from that to stop him from doing the rest. And then, you know, by extension, you wouldn't have had an opportunity for a Superman to say, hey, look at all that destruction going on down there. Maybe I won't ask the guy I know who lives in the sea. You know?
So
it'll make more sense.
So there's a classic, like, comic book trope, when you have a standalone story for Spider-Man and he's going up against a big threat that the writer wants him to go up against himself. And they throw in a couple panels where he tries to contact the Avengers and they're busy fighting someone else. And he tries to contact, Fantastic Four. Oh, but they happen to be off world right now. You know, they have to throw these things in to explain why this hero is going up against.
Yeah. Even Doctor Who did that for the New Year's special. She tried to contact UNIT because there was a Dalek on Earth, and she got back the reason being that UNIT can't help her is because they've been disbanded. I mean, even Doctor Who covers that base. Come on.
But the point is that it's hokey. Like, there's no need for it. You know, this isn't Aquaman's movie. This isn't Superman and Batman's movie. This is Aquaman's movie. You know, like, they could have done a quick shot of Superman on the beach rescuing some people, but what would have been the point?
Right, I agree 100%.
Mm.
Sorry, John, you're not going to win this one. So, I did see the previews, and I didn't look at who was in the movie before I watched it. So there were two people in it that shocked me. I had no idea they were in the movie. And, of course, the first one was William Dafoe.
Yeah.
As
Vulko.
Vulko, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can guess the other one. Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren as Nereus. So it's like, Dolph Lundgren actually really shocked me because I didn't realize it was him till I saw the credits afterwards. Because, you know, he had like a red beard. I'm like, they really made him look different, you know?
I did the same. I'm going, is that Dolph Lundgren? He looks like Dolph Lundgren. And even he's better than Amber Heard in this movie.
Yeah. I know.
He's really not a bad actor.
No, he's never been a bad actor. The guy's got, like, what, 3 PhDs? He's smart.
That has nothing to do with acting.
Yeah. I know, but he's smart enough to even... what I'm saying is he could even fake it if he needed to because he's just that smart.
Have you seen Masters of the Universe? I disagree with that.
So that was Masters of the Universe. Come on, who would have tried that?
Okay. So William Dafoe, right? What's the Vietnam movie he's in? Really famous.
Is it Platoon?
Is it Platoon? I think so. It's either Platoon or Deer Hunter.
No, he's not in Deer Hunter. It's Platoon.
It's Platoon. Okay. So Platoon. I know him from Platoon. I think of him as Green Goblin. So then to see him in a mentor role, it was like, whoa, wait a minute. I couldn't decide if it worked or not.
It's an interesting casting choice because I kept waiting for him to do something evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, I kept thinking, oh, he's going to, the one it's going to end up screwing over Aquaman in the end, you know, and getting him caught or something like that. I was like, nope, no, he really was a mentor.
Did you guys feel like we're missing a scene where Vulko comes to young Arthur Curry and decides to train him? Because it kind of just comes out of nowhere where it's like, oh, like his dad says, oh, like when Vulko trained you, I'm like, wait, did I go to the bathroom? When did that happen? And then they kept flashing back, but it's like there was no, like, initial meeting. Like, I felt like something was missing there.
Yeah, I kind of feel like there was a scene, but it's on the cutting room floor somewhere.
Yeah.
You know? But, again, the movie was over 2 hours, right? It was, like, 2 hours and 10 minutes or something?
Mm-hmm. It's a long movie.
Yeah.
No, there's like seven of them jammed into one.
So. Yes. So, we lost their initial meeting. You know, that's what Blu-rays are for. And then, yeah, like, but Dolph Lundgren was actually really good in the movie.
I agree with that. Surprisingly. Like, he was the biggest surprise of the film. Like, Dolph Lundgren still has chops.
Yeah. Wow, I know I'm jumping around here, but this has also just popped in my head, and I have to mention it, is, so this movie is basically, the bad guys want to take over the world, the main bad guy has to get all the, people that live under the ocean to work with him, so the hero has to go on the journey to find the magical, trident to give him the powers to win at the end, right? You know,
the MacGuffin. Yeah.
Yeah. The MacGuffin has to go find the magical MacGuffin. So, you know, it's your basic hero journey movie. It's a decent origin movie. You get to the end and you're in the final battle and he has the, what's the name of the creature that they're all afraid of who's guarding the trident?
It's like a Kraken, but they don't call it the Kraken.
Yeah. So, the Kraken is now working with him. And then he can control all the animals that they're riding to attack with. And he has the trident. And yet Ocean Master is still like, no, a cat attack, get him.
Well, he's a bad guy.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's,
but that's kind of, they kind of painted him to be a little bit smarter than that, but I guess not.
But that's what I'm saying.
At that point, in for a penny, in for a pound. What do you do? Have to take out your rival.
That's where the mustache twirling went over the top for me. It was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, you don't see like the embodiment of Cthulhu rise from the ocean that, you know, has been told, tales of have been told and passed down from generation to generation about how strong it is and how it, and nothing can defeat it. And, you know, see that appear on your battlefield and go, yeah, go get it.
counterpoint. Isn't that what Hitler did when they marched into Russia in the winter? Didn't he just keep on pushing their shoulders through no matter how many died? Wasn't that?
And that's what cost them the war.
Well, yeah, that's
true. Okay.
I mean, but okay,
so what you're saying is he was Hitler. He was C. Hitler.
Oh, for sure. But I think that's what he's kind of supposed to be. Like, or at least see, you know, generic bad guy, you know?
I feel like mentioning Hitler automatically makes somebody lose an argument on the net somewhere.
Okay, for Napoleon? Napoleon did the same thing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Waterloo, right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. And I get it. Don't learn from history. Oh, well, I guess he wouldn't have studied land history. So, and that's another thing too. So now, you know, obviously we all know Aquaman wins in the end. He defeats Ocean Master. The dumbest ending, of a movie ever where it's like, now what? You're going to be king. He goes, cool. It's like,
I was waiting him to.
Hello? I was
waiting for John to finish.
Yeah. John, you disappeared. We lost you.
John literally goes, I was waiting. And then we were all left waiting.
Did that joke knock? That joke knocked me off of my microphone. I was waiting for him to say, give me some sugar, baby.
It is a very Campbell-esque moment.
Yeah.
I would have loved it if he came out of the waterfall with the trident and said, "This is my boomstick."
Or if he just went groovy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he could have done any one of those things and it would have actually fit the portrayal.
It would have.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a pretty cheesy ending. So then it leaves you with, you know, at like, well, now what? You know, now he's got to rule Atlantis. So, Atlantis. Yeah.
I was fully expecting him to kind of abdicate the throne at the end because it didn't seem like he had any interest in being a king. And right. I guess it's kind of the awkward thing about the Aquaman character. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I was kind of, you know, it was Underwater Thor all the way up to the point where he's like, okay, I guess I'll be king, you know, and was like happy about it. Right. Cause he resisted it his whole life. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, sure. Why not?
And I thought they had their out when Nicole Kidman comes back.
Right, right.
Because I thought, oh, she could continue to be queen, and I can just go be Aquaman, the guy who goes between land and sea.
Yep.
I thought that would have been a better ending. Yeah, there's something about the ending they don't quite stick the landing on.
Yeah.
So we spent all this time. Okay.
Did you guys notice when they're in the lighthouse at the beginning of the movie? The snow globe with the lighthouse in it on top of an H.P. Lovecraft book.
Yes. Yep.
No, I did not notice that. Okay. It's
the Dunwich Horror. They didn't go for Call of Cthulhu, which would have been super on the nose, but they did do a little Lovecraft thing. I thought that was kind of cool.
Ah, they should have been playing Metallica's,
yes, but that would have cost more money. That would have cost more money.
Well, that's probably true.
And it would have taken the attention away from Pitbull's cover of Toto's Africa.
Oh, God. That was horrible.
Yes, it was. Do we really need two Africa covers to come out this year?
No.
Weezer had one, too.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. Nobody can do that song like Toto did.
Agreed. No one should put a rap into it, either. That was the greatest travesty of this film.
All right, so we can talk about Spider-Verse. Let's wrap this one up real quick. Let's go around 1 through 10. Tridents. We'll start with JD.
The math of the trident, 1 through 10 on the tridents, is perplexing me. I would give it. Let's see. I say it was like a B, so that would be like 7.5 tridents. I thought the good outweighed the bad. There's some stuff that bugs me, but it was an enjoyable. Like you said, when you turn your brain off.
Yes. John?
Well, how many prongs does each trident have? Three. Are the more prongs worth more than the smaller prongs ones? And it's like the other end counted as a prong?
Trident, three.
Well, that's not his original. His mother's trident had like
one. It was a pentadent.
Oh, pentadent. Okay. For the sheer value of being like a popcorn movie that once it comes out free on demand on whatever cable you have, you could just pop it in, grab some popcorn and, you know, put the kids in front of it and have, you know, a nice night. I'll give it a 7. That's a generous 7.
Okay. Wow. All right. I am going to, I don't know. I've been thinking about it. I think I'm going to agree with JD and give it 7.5, tridents. Definitely worth going to see. It gave us visuals we haven't gotten before in movies. Aquaman rides a giant seahorse and it works for some strange reason. I will say that the weirdness of Aquaman works in this movie. And if you want to just go see and enjoy a movie and I also kind of think this is a good sign that maybe they're on the right path now. Like, if they can learn the right lessons from this movie and start moving in more of a lighthearted direction with their movies instead of brooding characters all the time, then maybe we got something good here. So yeah, 7.5. All right. So now let's talk a little bit about your guys' favorite movie of 2018, Into the Spider-Verse. this is, I don't even know, like, what to say about it, you know? It's an animated movie. It is an introduction into the world of Miles Morales. Obviously it doesn't follow the origin story. It follows the origin story to a point, but obviously diverges by adding Spider-Verse characters in it, from the comic books. But yeah, so I'm not going to say much because I have some issues with it. I'll get to those. Let's start with JD, since you saw it twice.
We both did. Okay.
I adore it. I saw it on, I was going to kind of let this one slide. I liked it, but I was going to wait. And then on John's recommendation, I went and saw it. And then I was the one who said, hey, we should do both Aquaman and Spider-Verse. I put up a fight for this movie because I really like it. Like, I think that they, and I'm not a huge Miles Morales fan in the book. Like, I love the ultimate Peter Parker. So, I wasn't angry when he died, but I mean, like, I wasn't in love with Miles Morales at first. This movie did more to get me to like the Miles Morales character than 8 years of Brian, that 7 years of Brian Bendis writing it. I think they improved the origin. I think that Miles losing his uncle dovetails beautifully into the Spider-Man origin. I think that this movie does a great job of explaining why Spider-Man works and why kids in particular love Spider-Man. And it is the mask. It is that underneath it, anybody can be Spider-Man. It's a great story. Like, there are so many little things about this movie that I really, really loved. I like how they capture the awkwardness, the whole thing of Spider-Man, like the awkwardness of being a teenager and your body changing. And they delivered it in a different way in this movie. I really enjoy this man movie. I'm probably going to see it again before it leaves the theater.
Okay. All right. So they gave us two versions of Peter Parker in this movie, right?
Well, five or seven or something.
Well, okay. So they gave us the two, like, as Spider-Man, main Spider-Man that we're used to, Ultimate and Amazing. Let's just put it that way. 616 versus Ultimate Spider-Man. And they make Ultimate Spider-Man. First off, I will say, I love the nod to Ben Reilly. Did anyone catch that?
Blonde hair?
The blonde hair, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Parker with blonde hair was a nod to Ben Reilly, obviously. They basically parallel their lives, right? They both go through the same things, which, is it me or are they mirroring the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies?
That's what they hinted at, very heavy.
But in the Ultimate Universe, he still loves being Spider-Man. He's on top of the world. He's doing great. He's doing
wonderful. He's younger.
He's younger. He's a couple years younger. And, he's been Spider-Man for, I think they say 10 years. Gets into a scuffle trying to stop this collider from being turned on, which opens up the multiverse and gets himself knocked off, as it were. So then, obviously we know where this is going, but so this brings me to my first issue with the movie, and you probably aren't going to agree with this, but I could not stand their version of Wilson Fisk.
Really? Why?
It mainly was the voice. They made him sound like he was stupid.
Made him sound like he's from New York, I thought.
Yeah, but like they always, Wilson Fisk is always portrayed as this, the face he puts on, at least everyone, is this prim and proper upscale, like person, you know, loves the finer things in art. You do not get that from this Wilson Fisk. It's like, he's just a thug.
I didn't get that from him. I mean, it didn't feel like that. I mean, he was running the whole show there, obviously.
See, I thought they were doing a take on another person from New York who sounds like they're super from New York, pretends to like the finer things, but are just a thug. That's I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It bothered me, like big time.
See, I never got, well, he is just a thug who's compensating. That's why I've always taken from the character, is that his love of the arts and stuff like that is cover, is like him overcompensating for the fact that he is just a no good, rotten human being. But the voice I didn't catch that in his voice. I just heard a guy from New York, in all honesty. John?
And I agree with JD, and he also was pretty threatening because he was pretty brutal during the film, and when he killed the first Spider-Man in an extremely brutal way.
With bare hands.
Yeah, with bare hands, and like, you know, and they portrayed him, Wilson Fisk, as, I mean, he's borderline a mutant or something, right? Because he was always portrayed as much stronger than a normal human.
Yeah.
So I think he was spot on. I mean, every portrayal of Wilson Fisk is different depending on what movie or show you watch, but this one I thought was fine.
I thought that, I like that Liev Schreiber played a different kind of Kingpin than what we've seen from Vincent D'Onofrio on Daredevil. Like, I like that he just wasn't trying to ape his performance.
Hmm.
But I see where you're coming from.
All right. And then of course, after he's killed, I believe what happens first is, Miles goes with his uncle, and he's tagging a building. And while he's there, he gets bit by this very interesting looking spider who's glowing. There's no mention of where the spider came from in the comics. Those who've read the comics know that, it was his uncle who was the prowler, goes out on a job. It sneaks into his bag, and then it gets out of the bag and bites Miles, which is, you know.
Well, this spider seemed to have come from the collider. From another, it glitched, so it was definitely from another.
It's another world Alchemex.
Yeah.
And I think it's the Alchemex based on the post credit sequence. I think it's the Alchemex from Spider-Man 2099.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. We're not at the post credit sequence yet, but it could be.
We're in the spoiler part. We doesn't want to spoil in order.
Yeah, we don't want to go through. How long have we been on now? I don't want to go over this point by point. We've already done a review for this technically.
So this is what basically it comes down to, is that he gets his powers and doesn't know how to control them, and at the same time, we get Peter Parker. Is he the 616 Peter Parker? Who knows? Is he the movieverse Sam Raimi Peter Parker? Probably pops into Miles's universe, and he's a schlub. I don't know where they were going with this. I mean, other than, okay, the whole idea is he's lost love for being Spider-Man, and him and Mary Jane have grown apart because she wants kids and he doesn't, you know, and I get all that.
But it was a perfect plot point. It was perfect to play the Spider-Man that's lost his vision and lost his faith against a brand new Spider-Man who's just gaining his faith and learning how to use his powers.
Right. It's a classic trope of like the old guy who used to be great. Now he has to change to the young guy, and in a way it revigorates him.
They both gain from it. They both grow. And it may be an old trope, but it was done very well in this.
Oh, I agree. Tropes are tropes because they work.
I also didn't like the idea that he called the technical thing a goober. Like, Peter Parker's supposed to be really smart. Why? He's never used the term goober ever in the comics and in the movies or anything.
That wasn't, but the other Peter Parker didn't refer to it as that. This Peter Parker did. It's a different universe, Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And even in the comics, like not all Peter Parkers from the same universe are the same, you know, and it's the one who's lost. He just lost it. He's also in his like late 30s. So I mean, like he's kind of, I don't want to use the term loser, but I mean like underachieved. And he had, I mean, this Peter Parker definitely has lost a step. And I thought it worked fine for the character. It was just kind of like, meh. Like, he doesn't even want to help at first. He just wants to go home where he can sit back and sulk some more. Like, he's going through depression.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe. So they break into a facility to get the data they need to remake the goober, as it were. And we get our first quote unquote twist in the movie, where we find the doctor who studies all the multiverse stuff, and it's, oh my God, Liv Octavius. It's a female Doc Ock.
Me being the DC guy, I don't know this. Is that canon? Is there a Liv Octavius somewhere?
There is a female Dr. Octopus. Kane kills Dr. Octopus in the 90s, and he had a mentor that takes over who is a woman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's
But this isn't exactly that, though.
This isn't exactly that. This is a female version of Doc Ock, but it was like, you know, everyone was like, oh my God, what a great twist. And it's like, but they've done a female Doc Ock already. Like,
I think it works because you didn't know she was Doc Ock until the arms pop out of her back. And they did a great job. They did a great job hiding that she was Doc Ock. And there's even a great little line. And, there's a great little sequence with Peter. They're doing Peter's doing the little sequence. Oh, and then I'll check out the doctors. Oh, she's the lead doctor I saw in school. Oh. Then I'll re-examine my gender biases and go
ahead. Exactly. Yeah,
like, there's a great little joke there. And again, and she's so like warm to Peter at first.
I do like the line. Let me guess. Your friends call you Doc Ock? She goes, no, my friends call me Liv. My enemies call me Doc Ock.
Yeah, I thought she was really good. I thought that was a really cool take on the character. And again, it's a different universe.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing was peppered with little sprinkles like that of just really quick quips that you like, you know, seeing it twice, you start to catch them.
So this gets me to my first, and this is probably where it really, the movie lost me, is they're escaping from the facility with the computer. I did like the joke where it was like, why do you have the monitor? We don't need the monitor. where Miles has both the computer and the monitor trying to run out of there. And it's like, yeah, wait, you don't need the monitor. But of course they're trying to escape and they're being bumbling idiots going through the forest, and Doc Ock catches them. And of course they're then saved by.
Oh, Dave's least favorite character
my
in comics.
My least favorite spider character to ever exist, Spider-Gwen.
is this because Greg Horn has some really good prints of her?
No, I do not like the character. She's trash. So
I don't know what you were looking at, because the way she was portrayed in this was actually, you know, as nah.
Character's Heart trash.
Is the rest.
That character's trash. I do not like the character at all.
Okay,
never will.
Well, we're going to disagree on that, because I thought the way she was done in this, and I don't read a whole lot of Marvel. I don't know how she was portrayed in the comics, but in this movie, she was portrayed very well.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the fact that she had to save both Miles and Peter, who are probably two of my favorite characters, was just like, nah, nope.
Miles who doesn't know what he's doing, and a Peter who is way, like, he's running around in sweatpants. So we're not exactly talking about peak Spider-Man, either of them.
Right. And she was a trained gymnast or something? Or dancer or whatever? She had some training. She was mentioned a couple of times that, you know, that's why she moved completely. And again, the way they staged everything, every one of these Spider-Men, they move completely differently from each other. And she was more elegant and graceful.
So the other issue I kind of had with this as well was that, like, okay, I get Miles maybe never met Gwen Stacy, but, like, none of the other Peters recognize her.
Well, she's different haircut.
Well, is she,
you know, I mean, because, like,
is she canon in theirs? I mean, is there a Gwen Stacy in their orbit in their universe?
Well, if we assume that this is the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy meant absolutely nothing to him.
Yep.
But she did exist in the universe, and they did have a little bit of something at 15.
But this Gwen Stacy's 15. Like in Spider-Man, okay, let's be real nerdy here. In Spider-Man 3, they're in their early 20s. So this is a Gwen Stacy that's 7 years younger, approximately, than the Gwen Stacy that Peter would have met 15 years prior.
Right. And the other, of course, the other Spider-Men are all from weird universes. So.
Right. Well, the other regular Spider-Man dies before he even gets a chance to meet her. Like Noir, Spider-Man Noir, who knows if there's a Gwen Stacy in that one?
Yeah.
I don't think there is.
And I don't think there's a, I don't know, what would you call it? Gwen Stacy in Peter Porker's.
I don't think they did that one.
Yeah. I don't know, but see, I don't know, because even though they show the Sam Raimi stuff, is it Sam Raimi or is it the Amazing Spider-Man? And if it's the Amazing Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy is such an important character in Spider-Man's history.
I feel like you're really nitpicking on this.
But that's the thing.
I am, because
you are so giving Aquaman a pass for just being, yeah, it's a great time. And then this is like, this. You're just like picking it apart. It's like, dude, just enjoy it.
Because,
right, especially these are different universes, Spider-Man's. Like, we're talking about the Spider-Man in this movie. They might have said 616, but it's more of a wink and a nod. Like, that one has an origin closer to, and they never specifically say it's the Raimi Spider-Man. Because they hinted the Raimi Spider-Man stuff too with the Chris Pine Spider-Man.
Right.
Yeah, and one of the hints for the Raimi Spider-Man was when he was doing his cool dance when he was, you know, the Venom thing. But in this show, when he was doing the dance, he had on his costume. When in the actual movie, he didn't have the costume on.
And it's also clearly played as a joke.
All right. Yes. So let's get super nerdy here then. So then the concept would be that the Peter Parkers are all leading parallel lives, just there are slight differences that gets them to where they are, which means the Peter Parker was also living a parallel life who died in the Gwen Stacy universe, and thus there was a Gwen Stacy-Peter Parker pairing, so there would have been a Peter Parker-Gwen Stacy pairing in the Raimi universe.
But it wasn't close because the Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy's universe in this movie is Lizard, yes.
Right, because it was Gwen who got bit by the spider, not Peter.
Right.
That's the major difference.
Okay, so, well, look, I feel like we're nitpicking and we're like an hour and a half into this.
But I think they could have done something with that, you know, and instead, so like there's the scene. No. Well, okay. So now let's go to the Aunt May, part.
Aunt May was awesome.
This was a completely different portrayal of Aunt May that we've ever seen.
One who knows who Peter was.
No. And they've actively done that participated. But they've done that before. It's the actively participating and making her the guy in the chair, as it were. Which is weird too, because they talk about Aunt May dying in Peter B. Parker's universe. But they don't go into detail about she passed away.
He buried her. She didn't get murdered.
They don't say. They just say that he buried her. He didn't say what happened to her.
Okay. Well, again, doesn't matter in the greater sense of whether the movie was good or not. We're picking this apart now. It's not, you know, I feel like we're diving too deep into this. You know, it's a really good movie. The writing was good. It holds up as long as you're not trying to compare it directly to every timeline you've ever known.
So what did you guys think of Nicolas Cage's portrayal of Spider-Noir?
Freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Made me laugh.
Right. Like, Well, that was, I guess that was one of the things I felt was a little off balance. I kind of felt like Spider-Noir, Penny Parker, and Spider-Ham. Now, okay, yes, Spider-Ham definitely fits this bill, but they were kind of thrown in and used a lot for comic relief. And I understand it's hard to do a movie and give them all proper, you know, focus. You know, you can't do that, especially in a cartoon like this, but I don't know. I mean, I agree. I liked Nicolas Cage's Spider-Noir. I liked Peter Porker. You know, they definitely need someone who could drop anvils on villains. I like that they threw that in there. I will say that. I don't know anything about Penny Parker. Have either of you read any of those books?
So I read the entire Spider-Verse thing as it was coming out.
Oh, okay.
I think she's made up four. I'm looking at this right now. I think she was developed for the movie.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think her character, I could be wrong on this one, but I don't remember her showing up in the original Spider-Verse. I think they just made their own kind of an anime version of Spider-Man rather than using the Japanese animation Spider or the Japanese TV Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah. Who's also has a giant robot.
Yeah. I think she's more of a takeoff on that one. Yeah. Just to give some that looks a little different.
It might have been just more, I mean, the storyline for this is pretty serious in a lot of ways. And I mean, you're right that they probably had a little comic relief in there to balance the movie out. And if they had put Spider-Man 2099 in there or one of the other iterations, it might not have balanced out so well. So no, she provided a little bit of relief along with Peter Porker and Spider-Man.
Especially because it's Miles' movie. And these other characters are not, they don't, right. They have similar arcs, but they're all there to prop up Miles' story and to be a mirror image to Miles.
Right.
You know?
I agree. I like the parts where he talks about, you know, what he's going through and they're all like, we're probably the only people who are really fully understand what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Like those moments were decent. What's so funny?
You're so hard on this movie. It makes me laugh.
They're in the, how much they made, Peter B. Parker a schlub where it was like, they're at Wilson Fisk's trying to break in to get to the collider before he activates it again. And of course, Mary Jane's there to the Mary Jane of this world. And like that whole scene was awkward and painful for me when he runs into her.
It was supposed to be awkward and painful for everyone.
Like, yeah.
It was the whole thing. That was the exact thing they were going for.
The whole thing is like, he says he's sorry and she's like, for what? And it's like, wait, you could have just brushed it off because you just lost your husband. Like, you know, just leave it at that. Just be like, oh, thank you. And then move on. Then he was like, cause I gotta get you more bread. It was like,
but that's the whole point. It was partly him trying, basically showing him growing to the point or realizing what he's left behind.
Right.
From everything that's happened so far and then seeing her again and, you know, if you're truly in love like that, you're going to make a fool of yourself somehow. And okay, bread's a good, good meme for that. So it was supposed to, like JD said, it's supposed to be awkward and crazy.
He also doesn't want to go home. He's still of the mind that he's the one who's going to stay and die.
Yeah.
So this is the last time he's ever going to see the woman that he loves and can't say to her what he wants to. So instead, he's trying to find any reason possible to continue a conversation. And this Mary Jane is overly polite, probably because she hears a voice similar to her Peter's and the female and sees that Spider-Man face and is being a little bit nicer than she probably should be with a stupid waiter. So I think the scene, I think that part really works great. Mm-hmm. When you think about what that particular Peter's motivations are, because he's going to die very, very shortly. And that's literally the only way he could possibly say goodbye to the only person he's ever truly loved and screwed it all up. So I think I actually really like that sequence.
All right. Fine. So they get to the collider, of course. Miles shows up, like, even though they told him not to go because he wasn't ready, he still shows up, saves the day, stops the collider, and we get our fun little ending, you know, I'm the one Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. And then we got our fun little after credit scene where Miles, not Miles,
Miguel,
Spider-Man 2099, gets sucked back into the universe of the 60s cartoon Spider-Man.
That was funny.
And we get the famous spider clone that's become a meme of the two Spider-Man pointing at each other. One of the most famous memes on the internet, but now it's 2099 pointing at Spider-Man. And I don't know, you guys think that was hinting at a possible sequel?
I think it is hinting at a possible, well, I think there's definitely a possible sequel. I think we've hit peak meme culture, first of all. I do think that they said they're going to do another sequel to it. There's a lot more to do with that Miles character. They said they're interested in doing more with the Gwen character. Mm. So I think that will, and there's a little thing too where they talk to each other at the end of the night.
Which kind of indicates that they found a way to replicate the technology and are now able to skip between universes.
So I think that, and there's a lot more Spider-Man we can play with. So I do think they can do something a little bit more straight-laced, just Miles, or they can play more into the Spider-Verse thing. I don't know, I kind of hope they play more into the Spider-Verse thing because alternate universe Spider-Mans are a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some of them. Yeah, and like you said, there's so many characters they haven't touched on. Give us a universe where Ben Reilly lived and Peter died, you know, and it's the Scarlet Spider. That would be cool. So.
Yeah.
All right, so. So we've been going pretty long here. Let's wrap this one up. Let's go around the room. We'll start with John. You know, 1 out of 10 thwips.
I gotta give this one a 10. I'm gonna give this one a 10. This is probably one of the best comic book movies, animated or otherwise, that I've seen. You know, I unlike you, I'm not dead inside, so I actually felt something when I don't know, just all the stuff that he had to go through to get to the point where you could accept what being a hero and then go and save the rest of the Spider-Man. I just, I felt it. It was, and anything that can keep my nephews, the 12-year-old and 10-year-old, from playing Fortnite for an hour or two, and keep them engaged like that. So, you know, that a movie that's good for adults and for kids, it was, I think it's perfect.
Okay. JD.
This is also a 10. This, like I said before, I think this is my new favorite superhero movie. It's the best Spider-Man movie. They did different things with the character. The one issue I had before, one of the issues I had with Aquaman was its lack of character moments. This entire movie is nothing but a collection of character moments. And you see characters grow and change organically. And there's nothing that I felt, there's no point where that I felt the characters did something because the plot told them to. I thought everything was motivated. I thought the characters were sound with, you know, as far as sound can be in a movie like this, with their decisions. And I think that the moments between Peter and Miles, and there's a lot of great father-son type moments. Like the stuff with Miles and his dad really hit me. And then Miles develops this father-son relationship with Peter. And I think that works great And there's even the stuff with the remorse and the loss with this version of Wilson Fisk, who's motivated by his loss as a father.
Yes.
And I think that, I don't know, as a young dad, that stuff really, really hit home with me. And I said, I kept getting emotional, and it was always the dad moments, you know, and I, man, this movie really, really spoke to me. And, I'm looking forward to when my little boy is old enough to really appreciate it, because we're going to watch it a lot together. So 10.
All right. If this movie didn't have Spider-Gwen in it, I would probably give it an 8.5. But because of that, I'm giving it a 6.
It's like Rage 6, man.
Definitely worth waiting for on Blu-ray, but not worth going to see it in the theater. It's a decent cartoon to distract you for an hour and 40 minutes, but it's, you know, you're wrong, JD. The best Spider-Man movie is still Spider-Man 2, followed by Homecoming.
The critic, the Rotten Tomatoes also agrees with me. It's a 97%.
Yeah, that's
98%. I'm right. Yeah, I was just looking that up. He's like, I'm sorry, Dave. You're really in the minority in this.
But that's okay. That's what makes our show great.
Yeah,
is we do disagree.
Yes, And we still remain friends despite of it. Right, guys?
Sure.
Wow, oh, thanks.
Next week we'll do a comparison of Bumblebee to the rest of the Transformers movies.
Yeah, I hear that one's actually pretty good, not that I'm going to go see it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget, check out superheroespeak.com for all the latest news, reviews, and the latest episodes of the podcast. You can also purchase some of our merch while you're on our site to support us. And, and we will be back, of course, next week. And, let us know what you thought of both Aquaman and Spider-Verse. Do you agree with me? Do you agree with JD? Do you agree with John? Let us know.
If you agree with Dave, consult your doctor.
If you agree with Dave, then you're a true Spider-Man fan, and Ooh. You totally understand where I'm coming from with this. All right. So on that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening, and don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Spider-Man doesn't wear capes.
There was a Spider-Man with a small cape.
It was
the bastard one that went into space and wound up on the alternate Earth. Was that Ultimate Spider-Man?
No, not Ultimate. What was the name of that? It was something like Ultimate. Unlimited.
Spider-Man Unlimited, yes.
Yeah. He had a cape.
Yes, like a little web cape.
Like Miguel O'Hara, similar to that.
Yes.
Please keep this whole thing on the end of the show. This is going to never end.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of the longest episodes in a long time, but that's fine.